Out and get it either. There's a story Umapati tells that he was asking Prabhupada for 35 cents to fix a part in the tape recorder, I think it was. And Prabhupada said, you should not ask the spiritual master for money. So he said, oh yes, okay, I understand, but can I have the 35 cents to fix the temple tape recorder? I don't have any. He said, again, Prabhupada lectured, do not ask the spiritual master for money. And then he took the lesson and again asked for the money, and Prabhupada gave him the money. So that's the way it was. So anyway, at that time in the spring, then a big event came up. One man who lived in a neighborhood, a hippie, was running for president of the United States on the Love and Peace Party. His name has since got lost in oblivion, but I remember it. It was Louis Abalafia. So we went to the village theater. He had hired this theater for a few days, and anybody could come in free, morning and night, and there would be continuous entertainment. And in between, there'd be promotions for his political campaign. He would come out and say something. He used to have golden stars pasted on his face. And I never heard his speeches, but the pamphlet advertising who would be there had different rock groups and Allen Ginsberg and people like that, writers and poets. And then it said, Swami Bhaktivedanta and the Hare Krishna chanters. We were invited to go. But a controversy developed among the devotees whether we should go, because some of the performers were not at all respectable. So one group of devotees would go to Prabhupada and say, I don't think you should go, Swamiji. It's not good. I spoke to the lawyer. Mr. Ypsilanti said that if you go, it may jeopardize your immigration status. And then the devotees would come out of Prabhupada's room and say, he's not going to go. Swamiji's not going to go. As if they convinced him. And then the other group would go and say, this is a great preaching opportunity. We're on the Luri side, and these will become so famous. And they would come out of his room and say, Swamiji's going. And then one night after the lecture, Brahmananda used to sometimes get up and make announcements that we're now going to go out and chant Hare Krishna, please come with us. So one night he said, in 2 days from tonight, we're going to be chanting at the Louis Abalafia Love-In at the Village Theater. And Swamiji said, no, we won't be going. So it had become so much like changeable. We're going, we're not going. The Brahmananda, who wanted the Prabhupada to go, was making an announcement, and even then, like a few hours before, Ray Rama maybe had gotten to Prabhupada and convinced him not to go. But Brahmananda was so embarrassed. But then, on the night of the event, Brahmananda came out. Some of us, we just happened to be in the storefront. We're going to the Love-In. We're going in half an hour, Prabhupada, Swamiji is going. So he had decided to go, take the bold action and preach. So we walked a few blocks down there into the theater. It was completely packed because it was free. And on the stage was a group. And it was dark and strobe lights and rock and roll bass and drums were playing. And there was a rock band, and then there was dancers. And the dancers were dressed up like bananas. and they were celebrating a drug fad, which was that you could get intoxicated by smoking the scrapings of the banana peels. These people had even asked the temple that if we get bananas, if we give you free bananas, will you give us the peels? And Gargamuni had asked Prabhupada and told him all the implications, and Prabhupada said, all right, we're not going to do any nonsense. We can take the bananas. But that night, when he saw this group, Prabhupada became very grave and stern, and to be in such a horrible, hellish place. And he looked at it, and I always remember how he looked. But then we took part. We're running out of time. I'll just end it. We chanted, then we went back, we walked with him. We were protecting him, and he was protecting us, like it was father and his children. We went back to his room, and then in his room, we were talking about the event, and one of the devotees said, you know, this Mr. Abalafia, he's not even old enough to run for president, so the whole thing is a farce. And Prabhupada then he began shaking, laughing, and he put his hands in front of his face. He didn't want us to see him. And laugh, and he laughed and laughed like anything. And then he said to us, "All right," he said, "you go home now," because we didn't live in the temple. "You go home now, drink your milk, and say your prayers. This door will open at 6 in the morning," he said. "Jayo." And we said, "Jayo, Swamiji." So that was some of this sweet life of those days. All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The people around, and a devotee came from England and brought him a rasgulla from the deities, Radhalandan Iswar. And he took it and he said, even the, forget what he said, but this, he compared himself to the King of England or the Prime Minister of India. He said, even such a person, he cannot be sitting here in Kumbh Mela and have a rasgulla from London. His memoir of these events, one of the New York devotees, Brahmananda Das, spoke for all of us and said how he was shocked to hear that the Swami was thinking of leaving. And he said, "I never thought Krishna consciousness would go beyond the Lower East Side. I thought that this was it and it would stay here eternally." So now that kind of thinking may be hard to understand when we read about Prabhupada sharing his mercy and traveling all over. But it was hard for us to take in the beginning. It's like your father suddenly leaving home. So he came, opened up in around June or July. And so we were going strong now for 6 months. And everything was well established in our routine. We would chant every Sunday in Tompkins Square Park for about 3 hours. And then we were having love feasts, as they were called, in the temple. 3 nights a week, Prabhupada would lecture. We had made a record in December for the record company. And selling incense in the store, selling mimeographed, stapled back to Godheads and essays by the Swami. People were coming. In this way we were established. Prabhupada also began to teach morning classes every morning in Chaitanya Charitamrita. They're especially sweet, and you can hear them on lectures. I love to hear those lectures of Chaitanya Charitamrita in the mornings from 1966. All this was going on. I was very well established. Just if you allow me to indulge a little, something personal, I'll show you how my world was arranged. Take this as Second Avenue. And this is the storefront, 26 Second Avenue. As I showed yesterday, the first floor was where the temple was, and then there was a building in the back, and Swamiji had an apartment there. So I had an apartment on, this is Second Avenue, and then this is called First Street. Below this is the big Houston Street and then the Bowery. So I had an apartment right about here. And then where I worked, First Street and Second Street, Third Street, Fourth Street, Fifth Street. In the middle of the block is where the welfare office was. So this, I would go to see Swamiji in the morning. And then when it was over, I would usually, I would go either way, this way to work, and then lunch, right back up in the apartment with Swamiji, and back out again, and even here. So, and even when I was here or anywhere, you'd always know that Prabhupada is there, nearby. So everything was dependent on him giving up all bad habits and maintaining the beginnings of Krishna consciousness. All depended on his presence. So it wasn't a small thing when he said, when these rumors started coming that I may leave. Actually, Mukunda didn't go out on a preaching assignment. He said he was going to go to India. But before he would go, he would check out the scene on the west coast. He was a musician, he was going to learn some things about music in India and pursue his spiritual life. He asked Prabhupada for any names and addresses in India, and Prabhupada said, why go to India? India has come to you. So he went to the west coast, but then he didn't forget the Krishna consciousness, and he saw how ripe it was, and so he wrote letters back that it's much better out here in terms of young people interested in spiritual life and free atmosphere. Why don't you come out here? But it didn't seem like anything was really going to happen, and we went on with our happy life. But bit by bit, things happened, especially toward the end. In January then, Mukunda had gone so far as to rent a storefront, and Prabhupada said, I'll go immediately. But he didn't go either right away. And then Mukunda sent an airplane ticket. And then he told that they had arranged for a concert called the Mantra Rock Dance. And bands like the Grateful Dead were going to appear, and all the proceeds would go to the Radha Krishna temple. So it became a very serious thing that Swamiji said he was going to go. And some of us then who had not wanted him to go began to think about this invitation, and we were critical of what they were doing. We would talk among ourselves that they don't appreciate Swamiji. Just see the invitation to attend a rock dance with rock musicians and everything. This is not a way to treat the spiritual master. And so it will not be good. And besides, how can we carry on here? This is the headquarters, and the Back to Godhead magazine is put out here. So we had so many reasons. And we went to Prabhupada and presented those, but they were like nothing to him, no opposition. He said that he was going to go preaching. And so we realized that we didn't have any claim over him. But he had a vision, which he had had from the beginning, of spreading Krishna consciousness and not just staying in one place. Even Lord Chaitanya displayed that. The great acharyas display the rose-like soft quality, and they can be hard as a thunderbolt. There's a number of occasions when he left, when it actually came to parting after associating with Rupa Goswami, Gadadhar Pandit, and once when he left Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he went on his South Indian tour, Bhattacharya was going after him and he fainted in grief. And Lord Chaitanya just kept walking. He didn't even go back to pick him up. Prabhupada comments that the behavior of a great personality sometimes cannot be understood by us. So he displayed some of that. But when Prabhupada left us, although it was a great loss in our lives, like this, my little life was then and empty, that he wasn't there. You go into the storefront and he wasn't there. You go up into his room, he wasn't there. And what we're supposed to do 3 nights a week without him, we're supposed to do the kirtan ourselves and lecture. That was just pitiful, and that he wasn't there. But we discovered that he gave us something in his absence. So that's described in the biography. What was it that Prabhupada left us with? Anyone can say? Something new. Yes? Yes, he gave us service and separation. We didn't know that he gave it to us exactly until he wrote a letter back. It was a letter addressed to all the devotees who were there in a row on the page. Dear so-and-so, so-and-so. And he said, I understand from your letters that you miss me, but you should know that the order of the spiritual master is the main thing. His physical presence is immaterial, not important. The main thing is to serve him in his absence. So if you're feeling my separation too much, you can put my pictures on my sitting places. And we went, all right, we don't have any pictures. We didn't have any pictures. Although nowadays we have so many pictures of Prabhupada. We didn't even have that presence of mind to take pictures. Yes, so this was, then we began to understand it and talk about it, that although he's not here, if we follow his instructions, you feel something. And that, as with neophytes, you try sometimes you overdo your realization, and at least something was there, but we were trying to squeeze as much as we could out of it. And we'd even talk to the devotees in San Francisco. Well, you have Swamiji, but we have Swamiji in separation. You don't know what it's like. Sometimes we cry, and we're feeling so much that he's here, and this is the best thing of all in Krishna consciousness. He even says so. Maybe we thought they would be more easy to give him up if we told them how good it was. But they would think, well, you can have service and separation. We're getting to see Swamiji every day. And we're doing this, and we're doing that. We're doing kirtan. And then we would just become more unhappy. So, leaving the bunch in New York to survive as best they can, let's turn our attention to San Francisco. When Prabhupada arrived, he'd never been there. I know 50 people were waiting for him at the airport with incense and flowers and two rows. And so they gave him flowers, and he gave them back flowers, and he was dancing. It was a wonderful entrance into a San Francisco scene for Prabhupada. So newspaper reporters came to see him, and one paper reported, a holy man from India, described as one of the more conservative leaders of his faith, launched a kind of evangelistic effort yesterday in the heart of San Francisco's hippie haven. So when Prabhupada heard this read to him the next day from the newspaper, he said, we are not conservative, as he was described. So what did Prabhupada mean that we are not conservative? What are some of the considerations? To show that you can say something to show that Prabhupada's understanding that Krishna consciousness and he himself are not conservative. Yes?
He's done something more
charitable than
the disciples.
Yeah. Yeah, no one. You mentioned a number of things. Just the fact that he came to America was very liberal for a Swami, a bona fide Indian Swami. And the one point about women, that Prabhupada accepted women disciples. So if you take this from the viewpoint of a Vaishnava behavior, it's not conservative. It's bold. And even today, some of the Gaudiya Math sannyasis, they wonder how to, why is it that he allows the women to become disciples and they live in the same temples? So he judged the situation. He saw that there were boyfriends and girlfriends lived together. So, and he saw that in the West they're accepted as equal. So he allowed them to come right from the beginning. It was nice. And this is an example of his not being conservative. So he married the boyfriends and girlfriends. He said, you can't live like this. You should get married. He asked them to get married. He didn't say the other extreme, that it's not good to live together, therefore you have to break up. but he said, be married. Anything else that shows that he's not conservative?
Just the mere fact that he was trying to induce Krishna consciousness in malicious neurons, kind of going beyond just women, but just in general.
Yeah. And that leads also to the fact that he was accepting all kinds of people, and he gave them initiation very easily. I'm not conservative in that sense either. Liberal, giving initiation. Yes. Ah. Yeah. 16 rounds. He's giving. Okay. So there are many things we can list that show he was daring. Now, thinking about these things, we can't imitate them. And I'll try to bring this out a little more. Prabhupada's unique position, as we describe in the title, only he could lead them, and only he could innovate in these various ways. But now looking at it the other way, what did the newspaper reporter mean? And what did Mr. Ginsburg mean? Because Ginsburg was the one who made the remark, and the newspaper man wrote it down. He said he's very conservative. What did they mean when they said Prabhupada was conservative? Yamuna?
They were referring to Noah's success.
Right. To them, this was fundamentalist Christianity. What else did they consider conservative? Yes.
No drugs.
Well, that's what she... Yeah, no drugs, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Yeah.
His standard of dress was completely uncompromising his life routine.
Mm-hmm. Whether they saw that... Yeah, that's all right. He's so conservative that he wouldn't dress like a Westerner. He came in his religious priestly garb. You could see it that way. Another thing was that he taught... literally according to the scriptures, whereas the Swamis didn't usually do that, but would preach everything is one, whatever you do, it's all right. So this, they definitely had this in mind, a conservative fundamentalist. But Prabhupada, he protested their interpretation and said, we are not conservative, but we're not like that. Compromising and degraded. So when Prabhupada arrived, he was, Mukunda knew what the New York setup was, so he set him up in the same way. And this continued in ISKCON for a while, as like what you should do when you open a center. You get a storefront and then a separate apartment for the Swami, or a storefront movement that continued in Germany and in England and everywhere. There are some good features in that too. We're talking this morning about not being anxiety about money and preaching right on the street. So they gave him an apartment, and as we've described in the biography, Prabhupada entered the same setting and did the same things, including his writing. At the same time he arrived in San Francisco, he began the teachings of Lord Chaitanya there, which was to be a very important book for him, his way of giving us Chaitanya Charitamrita with selected dialogues. So he began doing that, and he was also doing the Narada Bhakti Sutras for a while. This was the second center that he had in America, so this would be the first time that we see how writing became portable for him, and how his preaching was like a movable situation. Again, the low desk, as he had in New York, and now he was working with a dictaphone in New York, dictionaries, and so on, and getting up early and doing it. So he found he was able to do this, even in a different environment, and he was very determined to do it. In this way, no matter where he traveled, he continued the same thing, doing many things, but spending a few hours in the early morning writing. later he said, someone said, I don't know how you could have written so many books. And he said, little drops of water wear away the stone. In this way I've written so many books. Every day I do a few pages. And at this time, similar to India, he didn't know how he would publish. There were no real plans exactly, although he hoped that his American disciples would be able to publish, but he was just writing knowing that it would be important, that it would be useful eventually. And it was one of his most important services to his spiritual master. I have a few stanzas about this written, and there's references in here to what we already mentioned. Also that there was going to be a mantra rock dance. I'm making a comparison between that and the quiet creativity of Prabhupada in his room. At the Avalon ballroom, hundreds of colored lights shone, but in Prabhupada's room at 1 a.m., there's only a desk lamp and a tiny colored light. A red bulb on the microphone of his Grundig dictaphone. And when that light is on, and his words come forth during intimate brief moments, as they accumulate into hours and pages, the world reaps the harvest of Bhaktivedanta purports. That small red light, more precious than the colored beams that dazzle jaded eyes and smear across the ballroom floor in psychedelic mixtures. The quiet of that room, with one firm, faintly uttering voice, is worth a million times the roar and thunder of the grateful dead. But even the dead had their transcendental hour, their night of consciousness, the mantra rock dance. Some other features about the West Coast is that in the first group of devotees, this is from a New York point of view, they were more loose and not so strict in following the rules and regulations. And there was more mixture of, they had all these girlfriends, boyfriends and girlfriends right from the beginning, whereas New York was mostly brahmacharis. So one of the devotees tells some stories that his disciples were so loose that when they weren't actually with Swamiji, they would go out and they'd smoke cigarettes outside, and right near the storefront there was an ice cream shop in one direction and then there was a donut shop. So they used to frequent those places, although it's not fit for a devotee taking food like that. So when Prabhupada would come out to go on a walk, he would walk past those places. First he'd go past the ice cream shop and look in to see if any of his disciples that were there. And then he would go to the donut shop on the corner. And the devotee telling the memoirs said the devotees would actually slink down in their booths so that he wouldn't see them in these places. And several times in his lectures, he plainly said, a devotee should not go into places like a donut shop or ice cream shop. So it was a different mood. It was also more active. They got him many engagements, going to colleges and other places, yoga clubs, and then outdoor kirtans, more exuberant than in New York City, all on the cement with the tenements all around, but rather in Golden Gate Park. And you've probably seen that fabulous film where they're all dancing in the meadow and the hill, and Prabhupada's in the middle. They're dancing around in a circle, holding hands. So he used to go out and do those kirtans. We don't have time to mention all the activities. But San Francisco, he gave the name New Jagannath Puri. And although in New York, when he was with us for this first time, we didn't have any deities, he installed Lord Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra in San Francisco, showing the importance of deity worship to purify devotees. And it was Lord Jagannath is most merciful. He will not accept offenses. So he was introduced first. And it was a very simple way that he introduced it. Can someone remember what did the installation consist of, the activities? Yeah, they offered a candle on a plate. one devotee after another, Prabhupada showed them to go before, hold the candle, and then give it to someone else, and they can go, and they can go. What else?
This is term. Yes, Jason. Kirtan.
Yes?
Kirtan.
Basically, there was nothing much at all. They just made the deities and put them on the altar, and then had a night of kirtan and feasting, and for ceremony, they rotated the candle and recited Jagannath Swami, Jnanapathagami, Bhavatume. This is indicative of Prabhupada's preaching in the early years, that he would not do things complicated or with any rituals, but introduce chanting or whatever it was in essence. And this is, again, this is, although they couldn't understand it in the West, this would be an example of Prabhupada not being conservative. So many Swamis would think everything has to be done exactly right, or you're breaking the Hindu Dharma or the Sannyas Dharma, and it would be very difficult. You can imagine how many things a smarta Brahman would be tripped up on and would think, this is very difficult, how am I going to do this, or how am I going to do that? But Prabhupada just wanted to preach, so he overlooked so many rules and regulations. He was describing that for a while when he left the Bowery and was living with this man and his girlfriend, Prabhupada's food was kept in the refrigerator next to cat food. And he said, actually, this is not according to sannyas rules and regulations. He said, but if I were to follow the rules and regulations, then I would have to give up preaching and go home to India. But I was more interested in preaching than the rules and regulations. So, although this is a very primitive stage of Krishna consciousness in terms of what Prabhupada was manifesting and the level of devotion that the devotees were on, yet he was showing his advancement himself as not being a follower of rules and regulations, but a follower of by bhava, or by spontaneous love. In this case, the spontaneous desire to spread Krishna consciousness. But based on that, he made so many decisions and did so many things. So this is a principle that we can apply in helping others advance in Krishna consciousness, do the needful. And it's based on our faith in the most basic practices of chanting and hearing and doing some service. But it has to be done carefully. When you do have facility to do things in the Suchi manner, in the Brahminical manner, especially now, 25, 26 years later, then we should do those things. I have a question here, but it's so general, I don't... I'll see if someone can answer it. What lessons do you think we can learn from Prabhupada's behavior, like with the installation, for administering Krishna consciousness to others? Anyone? Yes?
Lord Chaitanya said as well, you should just chant Hare Krishna first in the rules and regulations.
Ah, good. Yena tena prakarena manak Krishna nidesiya. Rules and regulations can come later. Just chant Hare Krishna. So especially in the beginning, don't worry that this may not be right or that may not be right. In some situation where Krishna consciousness is being introduced. Yes? Very good. For myself, I know that being trained up in that way, I've learned many simple things, and this is more just like a confession more than anything else, but maybe it can be useful. It becomes difficult for persons like me to adopt the more complicated and ritualistic practices as they were introduced during Prabhupada's time, and either by him, or sometimes not by him, but by the devotees, and he accepted them. But we always remember the simple things that he did, and we can't think, well, that they were entirely wrong. So the way he sang the kirtan and things like that. But we can't be over-attached to those things. Still, we remember them, and remember that they're more important than the rules and regulations, even though we follow them now. For example, I remember Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, 1968. Devotees went to Prabhupada and said, "This is the day today. Should we fast on this day?" And Prabhupada said, "No, there's no question of fasting." Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very lenient. He was 80% lenient. All the acharyas were lenient. So we didn't fast on the appearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and so many other persons. But now we do. And there are so many things that we do, but to speak of the way we do deity worship. So one can't be stubborn and say, "I learned it from Prabhupada this way, I'm going to do it this way." Which was partly just leniency for our early days. However, at the same time, we retain this impression of what's really important. If everything else has to be stripped away, it can be if the essence remains. Any comments on that? Yes.
There seems to be a trend within ISKCON towards more rules and regulations, and slightly based on Vedic principles.
Yeah.
Strictly following the Vedic principles, starting from the early days, building up to like this kind of
day. Yeah.
That we now have in the temple. So, do you see a day, one day, where there'll be no rule in the temple, for instance, will be strictly following Vedic rules and regulations?
No, I don't think so, because the other thing that's also happening is that the movement, as it takes place in different parts of the world, it develops symptoms and flavors of those cultures, and those are becoming rooted also. You have a Western version of Krishna consciousness and the way things are done, the singing or different programs, even the preaching programs. So that will develop, that will continue to develop. And so all the Vedic principles cannot be go over. In the West, and Prabhupada wasn't trying to do that. But as far, I thought you were also going to bring up the point that things are becoming more and more rules and regulations and institutionalized. So there's a limit to that. Being actually part of Gaudiya Vaishnav Siddhanta. Some of the institutionalism, it comes from other sampradayas, from South India and all these things. As there are Western influences, there are also Hindu influences, ritualistic influences, all these things coming into ISKCON. But the like the six Goswamis, and what they taught is mainly Kirtaniya Sadahari. One time, Prabhupada was in his room in London, and his assistant, Panditji, was doing a ceremony, fire sacrifice in the temple. So another devotee came up and said, "Prabhupada, Panditji is chanting the Purusha Shakta prayers." This is 1972, I think. Prabhupada said, "No, why is he chanting that? He should not chant that. That's for the smarter Brahmins." He said, "We have this fire ceremony just to make a show." He said, "But it should be kept as a shortcut. Don't make a big thing about it." He said, "Actually, the six Goswamis taught just to chant Hare Krishna. But if they only taught that, then people would criticize. The Brahmins would criticize. What kind of religion is this? All you do is chant Hare Krishna. Where's the ceremony? Where's the this? Where's the that?" So he said, "So we'll do it, but it should be a shortcut." So that he didn't want it to be like so many priestly things, rules and regulations. It takes away from the spirit of the Baba. Yes?
I guess I just wanted to amplify what you're saying. I also have that impression or bias that the way Prabhupada taught things sometimes was on a higher platform than the platform we think we're advancing to,
yeah,
by introducing so many regulative ways of doing things, or elaborate, ornate ways of doing things. Especially in the deity worship, Srila Prabhupada really taught the essence of the thing. And sometimes you see people, you know, they're looking for books and Motilal Varanasi Das trying to find something that they can do to increase the standard. Prabhupada already gave the higher.
Right, yeah. And we're sort of just, either we'll miss that point, unfortunately, or we'll discover it and appreciate it again. That there are Vedic rules and regulations which are not favorable for what we're practicing, and we should avoid them. Not that because it's done in some temple that's good for us. It's not good for the path of prema bhakti. Yes?
I was just going to say how that meant a preaching spirit.
Yeah, keeping things simple, streamlined. Alright, I had a stanza about the Gaudiya installation. O Lord of the universe, Swamiji led the prayer, kindly be visible unto me. As a teacher recites the ABCs, or pretends his hand around the child's, that he too is learning to form the letters, so Prabhupada stayed with his students and encouraged them to pray and serve. Another thing he did, at least one time or several times, was he went to the beach with the devotees at their request, and they had a kind of cookout and kirtan on the beach. They roasted some marshmallows and potatoes and chanted. As we described it, that he was doing what they wanted and they were doing what he wanted them to do, that is to become Krishna conscious and develop an affectionate relationship with the spiritual master. Out on the beach there, they had a new song, Narada Muni, the spaceman, and sang that to him. Don't think I'm loony, it's Narada Muni. And Prabhupada said, yes, very nice, you should compose more songs like this in your country tunes. Then at that day, at the end of the Prema Dwani prayers, he raised his arms and said, all glories of the Pacific Ocean. So this is seeing Prabhupada in a very nice spirit. And I have an application question about this. To what extent can we apply the example set by Prabhupada here in encouraging newcomers or devotees that may not be so serious? We shouldn't compromise the philosophy or practices, but sometimes it may be presented in such a rigid or impersonal manner that people are turned away. I guess it's just a reflection more than a question. It's something that required... Prabhupada had the perfect tact, when to allow a guitar or when not to allow a guitar, or how far something could go. And especially in those days, he was very... lenient, and devotees remember it. In fact, some devotees had trouble when things started to becoming more serious or more rigid to even give up practicing Krishna consciousness. But Prabhupada did capture their hearts by doing those things with them. Anyway, I guess it's just something to remember. That especially for newcomers, they may need something to touch them, in which the devotee has to extend himself doing something in their environment or their way. And so he may do that, as Prabhupada did, to eventually train them up to a higher platform. He was only there for 2 months. It's hard to believe, January, February, March. A little more than 2 months. And then he came back to New York. And the whole thing was already established. He told them to hold the Rath Yatra. And it was a wonderful work that he did in so quick a time. So then in New York City, I mentioned in this the other day, that life returned to normal again. But Prabhupada had a stroke after some weeks from overwork. Actually, the night before the stroke, we were at a television show, a Larry Burke show, and it was very hot lights, and they were affecting Prabhupada, although he didn't say anything. He was smiling and talking and singing. But the next morning, he slept late and he didn't feel well. And then later in the day, he actually had a very serious stroke. He said actually it was the time to die, as a person has a time fated to die or is hit by something that should end his life. He said that was the moment, but somehow Krishna saved me. But he fell back and he was partly paralyzed in his room. And the devotees, they didn't know what to do. They weren't very competent. They could hardly get a doctor or the Memorial Day weekend. So they were very trying times. I'm running out of time. I'll read a little bit of this prayer to Lord Nrisimha. He said, "But if I die in this condition, my mission will remain unfulfilled. Please pray to Prabhu Lord Chaitanya and Vrindavan Bihari to rescue me this time. My mission is still not finished." It was enough to fell any man, but he asked his students to pray. Our master has not finished his work. A bhakti yogi can evade death's blow, and by Krishna's grace, his life's duration may grow, and he may step on the head of approaching death to go on with his mission in this world. In Kirtananda's presence, Swamiji fell back and cried, "Hare Krishna!" That was the moment it was supposed to end by normal calculations, but he kept going. The heart kept going, the mission kept going. And then he asked for the mantra to be sung, the prayer to Lord Nrisimha, and the all-night praying, "Our master has not finished." Krishna carried him over as on the Jaladuta when he had appeared, reassuring him from a boat. Stone-hearted, dull, selfish youth got a chance to touch the body of the pure devotee in his difficulty while serving Krishna. So he went to the hospital, and at this time, a lot of questions came up in the devotees' minds when we would talk. Basically, it was like, what happened? Why has this happened? We had a sentimental idea. Prabhupada was a pure devotee. That meant it didn't matter that he was old, that he could do anything. He could work hard all the time, and nothing affected him. But now, he might pass away from this stroke, and we didn't know. We couldn't understand it. So there was doubts and questions among the devotees. And you've read about this, so I'll raise some of the questions and ask you to answer them. We asked, what is the difference between the suffering of an ordinary man and that of a pure devotee? Someone say?
Kalipani? The suffering of a pure devotee is visible to us, but he himself doesn't identify.
Because he doesn't identify with his body. Okay, yes? Yeah, it's arranged by Krishna. Another one. If a pure devotee cannot be touched by Maya, then how can Maya deliver a death blow? And I'll read Prabhupada's comment on that to show that he did think Maya had something to do with this. In a letter he wrote, when devotees asked him, what was that, Prabhupada? He said, when there is a fight between two belligerent parties, it is always expected that there will sometimes be reverses. Your country and the Western world is mostly under the grip of Maya and the modes of nature in passion and ignorance. And my declaration of war against the Maya is certainly a great battle. Maya saw me very successful within 1 year, so that I got so many sincere young flowers or followers like yourself and others. So it was a great defeat to the activities of Maya. Western country youngsters giving up illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating and gambling is certainly a great reverse in the activities of Maya. Therefore, she took advantage of my old age weakness and gave me a death dash. But Krishna saved me. Therefore, we should thank more Krishna than eulogize Maya. So far, my present health is concerned, I think I am improving. As soon as I am a little fit to return to the field of battle, I shall again be in your midst. What a chivalrous attitude Prabhupada had. Well, this is remarkable, this interaction he describes with Maya, giving him a death dash. Yes? Yes, another way is that Prabhupada said this was the last phase of that heart attack. He said it was twice it happened, and then I thought it was going to come again, but it didn't. But then it did come, over a year later in New York, he said that was the same thing. And then I remembered when it came in New York, this is what I had on the boat. So in that sense, it was the same type of thing. What changes did Prabhupada's illness bring about in his life or his dealings with the devotees? It changed quite a bit, actually. It changed our attitude that he could do anything and nothing would affect him. That we had, in other words, we had no task of protecting him. But now we saw that, well, maybe Swamiji shouldn't play the drum for 3 hours, shouldn't sit under hot lights and things like that. Although too much attempt to control him, he would not allow. But our attitude changed. And his activities changed permanently in a way after that time. It wasn't just our unthinking attitude toward him. He was actually very robust. Even though he was 70 years old, he was like that. He was strong, and he could play drum and stay and do everything without any effect. But then after that, he wasn't the same. Although he went on to do things that he hadn't done in his first years, to do so many things, but it was more like more on pure spiritual energy with not much of a body. But before, his body was also seemed to be much stronger. So it just shows us that Prabhupada didn't need that body, that he went on and did even more, traveled more, and so on, but with without what he had until that stroke. So he tried to recover in New Jersey, Long Branch, New Jersey, in a house, but the sun didn't come out. He thought he needed the sun and rest. But he would start preaching right away as soon as he saw a devotee. He would start talking about Krishna and sit up in his bed. He was always like that. Not a good patient if rest was required or medicine. And then he thought, if I go to the West Coast, maybe the weather will be better. So he went out there. And there he stayed in a house by the beach, and there were some more pastimes with devotees. One of them I'm going to mention, because it has to do with our theme, only he could lead them. He was thinking, I think I should go back to India. Partly he said, because I'm not getting any better, my health is broken, I think I may die. And so I would rather go to India and die in Vrindavan. And then also, maybe, although if I go to India, it'll be good for my health. So those two things were sometimes said by him. So hearing these things, one day, one of the devotees, Mukunda, said, "But Prabhupada, if you do go back to India, could one of your godbrothers come and conduct the movement that you have started?" What did Prabhupada reply to that suggestion? And you asked all the questions. Yes. If he tells you something even a little different, then you'll be confused. No, he said that it's not that somebody else could come. And then he cried, thinking of his spiritual master, and said, "He saved me." So the devotee was impressed with a new understanding. How important is the relationship with the spiritual master? It's not so easily substituted. In the introduction to the Unabridged, I've discussed this theme, only he could lead them, with a couple of meanings. And one is that he started it. He was the one who attracted the young people, and no one else did it or could do it. It was his field. So by Krishna's arrangement and by fact, only Prabhupada could do what he was doing, which kind of ties in with Mukunda's question. And also, he was the only one who could transplant the Vedic culture to the West and make the different innovations he did, like 16 rounds, boys and girls should get married, and so many things. Only he could do that, not that we later can make so many adaptations on what he did as innovator. So this is something that ISKCON is trying to do and sometimes straying from, to keep the attitude that only Prabhupada shall lead us, can lead us, even after his disappearance. then he firmly decided, I'll go back to India. And then devotees started realizing how dear he was to them. There's a description of the last night in San Francisco. It's like a mad rush. Devotees wanted to get initiated. They said, I'll never see him again. I have to get initiated. Some devotee says that the assistant was rushing people in. Anybody who wanted to could get initiated, but this boy was left out, and he walked off crying, and then they went and got him and said, you can be initiated. Come on. And he was just taking anybody's beads and chanting them and initiating them. So only when you think that he's going to leave in an emergency do you realize that the preciousness of a person like Prabhupada. We should not have to have these things happen to develop such greed to serve and surrender. But that's the human nature. Anyway, that occurred like that in San Francisco. And then he came back to New York. And there weren't that many new candidates, but his crew was there, and we were all shattered to know that he was only going to stay a few days. He had his tickets. He was going right on to New York, to India. I remember asking myself, if he doesn't come back, will I be able to practice Krishna consciousness? And I really couldn't say whether I could without him. We so much needed him to come back. There's a photo, a posed photo by Air India of the devotees in the New York airport just when he's going to leave, and it shows kind of some of the emotions. There's a memoir that I'd like to read, and I guess that'll be the last thing. I'll read some of it. This is by Rupanuga. I'll paraphrase some of it. That he says, we were all with Swamiji in the airport, and then he allowed all the men to embrace him, and he patted the women on the head. I never expected he would ask me to step forward. I didn't consider myself in the same category with the other devotees. I was very much surprised when Swamiji motioned to me and spoke my name, Rupanuga. I got up and walked to Swamiji. It might have been 10 feet, but it seemed like a long distance. I embraced him, and that embrace was the most memorable embrace of my life. Right away, I noticed Srila Prabhupada's strength. He was so strong, it was like embracing a young man. I was 27, and he seemed stronger and younger than I, and he hugged me tightly, and I also embraced him firmly. He was smaller than me in stature, so I instinctively buried my chin in the hollow of his left shoulder. While I was embracing him, I felt very blissful, and I felt a light. I felt there was a light, something pure, like energy emanating from my face. I was so happy and blissful that it reflected. The airport scene was a very important part of my life because for me, a person who always had difficulty in loving another person, Swamiji's leaving forced out a lot of love from my heart I didn't even know was there. It's like becoming a spiritual person when you feel love really developing for the spiritual master. I was becoming a spiritual person. It was a tremendous outpouring of feelings of separation and grief at his departure because we all knew he was our life and soul. And to a person, none of us were sure that he would ever see him again. Jai Joitam Raj has sometimes shared with us his memories of coming to Krishna consciousness. He joined at 26 Second Avenue just after this scene took place, pretty much, and tells us that the devotees were still outpouring this these feelings for Prabhupada, and Brahmananda would talk about Prabhupada and cry, or the letters would be read. So this was generated by the way he left, with thoughts that he might not come back, plus the fact of what he had done to us when he was with us. So the whole thing was to churn up attachment to him and dedication to him, arranged by Krishna, because Prabhupada did come back. But these things, as so eloquently said here by the devotee, they bring out, force out the love and create attachment for serving Krishna. But we can pick up tomorrow from that. Thank you. All glories to Prabhupada. We left off yesterday. Prabhupada went to India, 1967, was after having a stroke, to either die, as he said, in Vrindavan, or to recover his health. And push on the Krishna consciousness movement. So briefly, he stayed there 6 months and he started to recover right away. He had a few American disciples, or one came with him and another joined. They didn't do so well in the heat of India. And still, he wanted to start something. So while he was there, he looked into the possibilities of starting in a center. He called it an American house. And he got letters from his disciples asking him to come back as soon as possible. That was when he wrote that statement, "Vrindavan is inspiration only. Our real field is worldwide preaching." So this lecture today covers a period of about 2 years after Prabhupada came back to America. When he left India, for India, there were about 2 or 3 centers. But when he came back from India, there was about 6 centers. And after that, it began to spread rapidly. In one talk, later Prabhupada said that this movement, for a while I was struggling in New York for a year, but it actually began in 1968. It came back at the very end of 1967. So this is a period of great expansion, with Prabhupada personally going and pushing on the expansion. Now, in order to explain this under the title Empowered to Spread the Sankirtan Movement, I want to explain how Prabhupada himself was empowered and how he empowered his disciples to spread Krishna consciousness. To do this, to help us understand, I would like to consider Lord Chaitanya's method of spreading Krishna consciousness that's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. A verse states about Lord Chaitanya's tour of South India. As soon as he saw someone, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would request him to chant Hari, Hari. Whoever heard Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chant also chanted the holy name of Lord Hari and Krishna. In this way they all followed the Lord, very eager to see him. After some time, the Lord would embrace these people and bid them to return home after investing them with spiritual potency. A nice Sanskrit word is shakti for this, too. Someone has the power or the potency. So, in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada writes, that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains the spiritual potency is the essence of pleasure potency and the eternity potency. By these two potencies, one is empowered with devotional service. We're now getting a technical explanation of what this phrase means, to be empowered as a preacher. Lord Krishna himself or his representative, the unalloyed devotee, can mercifully bestow these combined potencies upon any man. Being thus endowed with such potencies, one can become an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Anyone favored by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was empowered with this bhakti shakti. Thus the Lord's followers were able to preach Krishna consciousness by his divine grace. So this is the explanation of Lord Chaitanya's method of spreading Krishna consciousness. And it was used by Srila Prabhupada with great faith in the same process, the chanting of the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the empowered devotee is blessed with samvit and hladini potencies. Who can say what these terms mean, samvit and hladini? Yes?
Samvit means knowledge.
Is that right, Jai George Maharaj? Samvit? Knowledge? So going on with this, these two potencies, when they come together, they're called Swarupa Shakti. And when a devotee is in the pure state, called Vishuddha Sattva, then the Swarupa Shakti descends on him. Empowered means some divine blessing or entering of power into the person. So descending process. And when this happens to a person, it's understood that he's attained a stage in the progressive steps of Krishna consciousness known as Rati or Bhava. So this can be bestowed by Krishna or Krishna's representative. Now, the fact that Prabhupada was able to give this to others, to empower them, is a symptom that he himself is on the highest level and directly empowered by Krishna. Very soon after Prabhupada's disappearance, some of his godbrothers praised Prabhupada about being empowered, and they quoted a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita about this. Anyone know that verse? Yes. Kali Kalera Dharma Krishnanam Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vinana Tara Pravartana. What does it mean? That any person who can spread the holy name Hare Krishna mantra all over the world, in order to do that he must be empowered by Krishna. In this age the Dharma is Sankirtan. So whoever can do that. So more on this Chaitanya Charitamrita process by Lord Chaitanya. Being thus empowered, they would return to their own villages, always chanting the holy name of Krishna, and sometimes laughing, crying, dancing. These empowered people used to request everyone and anyone, whomever they saw, to chant the holy name of Krishna. In this way, all the villagers would also become devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's a letter, I remember vaguely, that Prabhupada wrote to a girl, wasn't initiated, I think she had gone to the Bahamas, islands off the coast of the United States. And she had contacted devotees and was chanting and was asking a question of Prabhupada and also telling that she had told some people where she had gone about the chanting. And he was encouraging her and saying, this is the process, that I tell them to chant and you heard them chanting, now you tell someone else to chant, and this is parampara. So even if the carriers of the Hare Krishna mantra, especially in these years that we're talking about, were themselves not very advanced, Prabhupada encouraged them and didn't say that only he could chant Hare Krishna with potency. And it's a fact that his followers did spread the Hare Krishna mantra by chanting in parampara with great enthusiasm and confidence. Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, in order to become an empowered preacher, one must be favored by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his devotee, the spiritual master. One must also request everyone to chant the Maha Mantra. In this way, such a person can convert others to Vaishnavism, showing them how to become pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, with this frame in mind, let's look at how some of the how the spreading took place. One particularly interesting group is the group of three householders that Prabhupada sent to London. Mukund and his wife, Shyam Sundar and his wife, and Guru Das and his wife, wives, Yamuna, Malati, and Janaki. So they all had some experience in San Francisco under Prabhupada. So he wanted them to go to London. They, on their way, they joined him when he was visiting in Montreal, and he began to train them in kirtans and bhajans, although it really wasn't so much specific training for preaching in London. But at the end, when they were going to leave, Mukunda asked Prabhupada, is there any specific instruction for what we're supposed to do in London? And in response, Prabhupada told this story of the Charlie Chaplin film. Charlie Chaplin, was, you all know it, I think, was dancing in the ballroom with his lady friend. And then they went out of the ballroom to sit in the garden. But some naughty boy, as Prabhupada said, had put glue on the chair, bench where they sat. So after Mr. Chaplin stood up again, his formal dress, he was wearing a jacket and with tails, and it ripped up the middle. So anyway, he went in and started dancing again, but different people on the dance floor looked at him. Oh, look at this. This man has ripped his jacket, and he was causing some attention. He didn't know what it was. He went into the men's room and looked in the mirror and saw the rip, and then he ripped it all the way up the back and went out again and began dancing very dashingly all around, showing off his ripped tail. And now the people began to look in a different way, and they began to think, look at this man, this is the latest style in dressing. And so they all began to rip their jackets. So and the whole dance floor was filled with this, people dancing with ripped jackets. So as Mukunda tells it, the devotees laughed like anything that Prabhupada would be telling such a story. But they didn't exactly, he says they didn't relate what he was actually saying in terms of purport. And only after they left his room and were talking among themselves, they realized that he was giving an important instruction. That if they went to London and did as he asked them, to go on the street and chant Hare Krishna, it would at first be seen by the British as crazy exhibition. But eventually they would see it as something fashionable or interesting enough to try, and they would do it. So he was asking them to be bold, not be afraid of what others would think, and be confident. In this way, the great person can empower his disciples, and at the same time he empowers through them grand disciples, and through them great grand disciples. He has this potency to do that, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. The people would hear him chant, they would go to their village and chant, and people would become ecstatic and go to another village and so on. In a sense, it's a grand concept to be empowered. Sometimes we apply it to Shaktivish avatars. Narada Muni is empowered by devotion. Prithu Maharaj is empowered by administrative ability, and so on. But even we can be empowered who are not so great if we act under the order of the spiritual master. So during this same time, the Prabhupada was that we're talking about, I was thinking of my own case. And I wanted to give some examples of how I did things that I never would have thought of doing, and how they worked because of Prabhupada's order. Just when Prabhupada went to India for his health, he asked me to go to Boston, so to start a center there. And I didn't think I could do anything. I never did anything like that, any kind of leadership or pushing myself forward to what to speak of. Being like an evangelist and telling people that you should change your life and do this. So I didn't know what I would be able to do. So the first thing, though, in those days we didn't have income raising method, except that some devotees would have a job and give money to the temple. So I first had to get a job in Boston. And I went there. I had a job in New York in the welfare department. So I went and got an interview and got a job that very same day. And one reason I got the job was in my file, they looked at my file, well, what did he do in New York? So in that file, there was a letter from the commissioner of the welfare department in New York commending me for not going on strike. There had been a big strike of caseworkers, and they all didn't go to work. And so the whole place, the whole welfare system would have been very much disrupted, except a few people went to work. So the only reason I went to work is because I was working for Swamiji. And so I told him there's a strike, and he said, well, we don't care about that. You should keep going to work. So that in itself enabled me to get the job in Boston, his order. And I got it in one day. When I went back, I told Prabhupada that night that I went and I got the job. And he said, yes, by Krishna's will, this happened. Then another thing, in going to Boston, I was afraid of the Harvard intellectuals. I had some idea in my mind that they're very intimidating because Boston and is next to Cambridge and very influenced by these aristocratic intellectuals. If I had to argue with them according to philosophy, how would I do it? But by following Prabhupada's words, I was able to speak and not be defeated. So this, I experienced that. And I realized it wasn't myself, but it was just sticking to his message. As far as our growth there, it was quite slow at first, but we had a sense of being rooted, that we were going to stay there and we belonged there and the movement was going to be there. And that especially happened after Prabhupada visited in 1968, the sense that we were established and empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. So I think every devotee in this room has had that experience at times, that the Shakti has descended on us to do the mission of the previous acharyas. Now, an aspect of these years we're talking about, and a factor of being empowered, is that everything was done with much confidence. The whole time the Prabhupada was on the planet, this was there. And at this period, especially, the confidence to go out into the world with no preparation, just a young boy like Shivananda going to Europe, or a young boy and girl married, go somewhere and start preaching. And feeling enthusiastic and confident that they would make some effect. This is expressed in a letter that Prabhupada wrote to a devotee during this time, to Dayananda. "It is the grace of Lord Krishna that he has put me in contact with so many rare souls who are taking Krishna consciousness in all seriousness. And I am confident that in the future, all my student boys and girls will preach this Krishna consciousness in the Western world more successfully." Prabhupada himself is confident, so we became confident. There are some expressions of Prabhupada's confidence I heard in a typical lecture that he gave in 1972 in Vrindavan, in which there were guests in the audience. So he was telling them about the monthly expenditures of our movement at that time. He said that in Los Angeles they spend $20,000 in a month, in New York $10,000 or more, the whole society is $70,000 a month. And yet, we have no fixed income, how this money is raised. But because we're doing it for Krishna, it goes on. We sell books, and that's all. And we're so successful that we have many cars, and we have... And in Los Angeles, where we have our best center, our biggest center, the neighbors become envious. They see the devotees look so happy, and they have cars, and they dress nicely, and they're eating well. And that they're jealous. How are they doing this without any fixed income? And he was also confident that it would spread. In the same lecture, he told that he was traveling traveling to Nairobi. Somehow the plane stopped in Athens over at midnight for a connection. And he was just getting off the plane. He'd never been to Athens, and there was no preaching going on there. But some young men were in the airport and they saw Prabhupada and they began singing, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." Prabhupada mentioned this, how it's spreading. We're known as Hare Krishna people, they respect us. And he said, in the Philippines, where they're supposed to be dog eaters, they chant. And he was proud of a program that had been put on by his disciples, which he attended. And he said, the young people came, many of them came to a hotel where this was held, and they chanted even better than the so-called Vaishnavas in India. We have 100 centers. Now, this was 1972, we had 100 centers. And Prabhupada said, "All around I see bright. This is the glory of Krishna." To show you the mood of this confident era, there's a letter in which Prabhupada is responding. The devotees would write about their wonderful preaching activities, that they went out to a rock concert or to a concert of the musical hair or something, and so many people chanted, and then they would tell some difficulty that happened, but how they had triumphed. The Prabhupada would respond to these things, and this is his response to things going on in Hawaii in 1969 under his disciples Gorsundar and Govindadasi. I am so much pleased by reading your letter describing your preaching activities in Hawaii, both husband and wife together. It is very much pleasing to me. I was shocked when I heard that Gorsundar was hurt on the chin, but at the same time I was so much enlivened by hearing of your spirited preaching activities. I am proud that a little young girl like you is so much spirited in preaching Krishna consciousness. I was very much sorry to learn about Gorsundar being attacked by a fanatic, but don't be disheartened. Even Nityananda also faced such difficult problems, but tried to avoid them as much as possible. The whole world is full of fanatics and atheist class of men, so sometimes we have to face such difficulties, but this is all tapasya. Without tapasya, nobody can approach Krishna. So preachers who boldly face all kinds of difficulties are considered to be under tapasya, and Krishna takes note of the devotee, and the devotee is recognized by him. I have asked the BTG men to publish your heroic preaching activities under the heading of Heroine Govindadasi. So I am sure Krishna is very much pleased of this incident, and he will surely bestow his blessings both on you and Gorsundar. So try to continue preaching Krishna consciousness to the suffering humanity as far as possible. Now here's a question. Whether this spirit has gone down in ISKCON, was this just a period of innocence that the devotees were so confident and so empowered, and at that time the movement spread so fast? Or should we see it just as an inevitable change and say that ISKCON has changed, but it is still on course? Would anyone like to make a comment or question? An answer to that question I raised? Was this? I don't want to repeat it. Or any part of it? Oh, that's good.
Depends where you go.
Depends where you go in the world.
Yeah. Some parts of the world are super enthusiastic and they go out and distribute books and do wonderful things, and they're confident and they pull off all sorts of
heroic
exploits. And some places, you know, everybody's busy trying to feel sorry for themselves and, you know, criticizing or what have you. They're just not going there.
Realistic answer. Yes?
Yeah, I think generally also the younger people are more enthusiastic. It's a time that youth is very daring and revolutionary, and still on most different people, the young people are very bold in their preaching.
Yeah. So we have to find keep up an enthusiasm that may be suitable with the life changes we go through. Otherwise, only the young people are enthusiastic. It's not good. That's a good reflection. Yes?
I think now the administration is more cautious, especially after this is like a lot of people. It's just like that making us look more aware of what happens.
Yeah. One manager devotee told me that he said the ecstasy seems to be gone from Krishna consciousness. Now it's replaced by sober responsibility, he was feeling. He was kind of lamenting it. There's no question of his giving up with his dedication, but it's not like he doesn't have the spirit that he used to feel. I hope these things are not all inevitable. We're just making some comments, not meaning to really evaluate or criticize this con in such a limited time, but I just wanted to bring it up to date to give a little more relevance to this period that we're talking about. See if we can recapture some of it, see what it was and where we're at now. Yes?
Sometimes the
Shooting star is like,
yeah, more reason for caution. Sadder but wiser attitude. All right, you can keep that in mind. We might raise it again in some other context in this class. During this period, Prabhupada himself visited and inspired the starting of centers in Buffalo, New York, Boston, Montreal, Santa Fe, and he continued to keep up the centers in Los Angeles. He went to Santa Fe, New Mexico, Seattle, and he spent a month in New Brindavan. And as I mentioned, when he was in Montreal, the three couples went to London. So while Prabhupada was doing what he was doing, let's look at how the devotees managed in London. And this brings up right away the service and separation which was going on. Even though Prabhupada was present on the planet, devotees went somewhere to preach, and they preached on his order. So this is the Vapu and Vani teaching, that the Vapu is not always possible to have, but you can experience the association of the spiritual master by dedicating your entire self to carrying out his order. Not just that I have a guru, but I'm doing a lot of other things. But in these cases, these people only moved somewhere on the order of the guru, and whatever they did, it was just to carry out his mission. So they had an intense feeling of that separation. And some brief excerpt from the devotees in London, telling about the importance of letters that they got. It became quite difficult for them. At first they were staying together, then they couldn't afford that anymore. Yamuna says, I had to move to a Jamaican ghetto, the top floor of one of the buildings. It was awful. Day after day I would sit and listen to a tape of Prabhupada singing, and I would pray to him, please come, please come. Mukunda says, letters, that's what kept us alive. Prabhupada would write and say, I am coming. Two or three times he wrote to say, I am coming by March. And we would write back and say, we wanted to get a place first. What about Srila Prabhupada and service and separation? How did he demonstrate that? Was he on? He was also doing that. Any comment about Prabhupada's quality of service and separation, or example? Yes, let me. The spiritual master, yeah, he didn't feel that he wasn't with his spiritual master. The spiritual master was with him. And he was very much in that mood, which, as we discussed earlier, he didn't have that much personal association. So he very much was in the mood. But for him, it wasn't like a starved thing, a thing that made you depressed. But he felt intimacy and did everything in that consciousness that I am getting his strength, I'm getting his blessings because I have faith and I'm doing what he asked to do. So we could see that in him. Therefore, we could do it also. The devotees in London invited Prabhupada to go there. But first, he went to Hamburg, Germany. And about that visit brings up another point. Although this burgeoning of ISKCON, which is our theme, and emphasizes rapid growth and wonderful happenings, still, ISKCON was small, and it was by small increments that it increased. We got excited about little things, a few people joining and so on, and Prabhupada encouraged us, but objectively, it was small. So it's not that every time Prabhupada visited somewhere, there was some sensational activity as awaited him in London with the going to meet George Harrison and the Beatles and so on. So typical of that was his visit to Hamburg, where there was a storefront temple that Shivananda was keeping. This is described in Volume 7 of the Unabridged Prabhupada Lilamrita. There's a chapter about Hamburg. And he was there for Janmashtami, and he just stayed in his apartment and shaved his head and talked with a few devotees. But still, He always did serious work implanting instructions and meeting a few people even who later became instrumental in spreading Krishna consciousness in that place.